Accession number 13122, Mr. Ron Dinnins, Reel 8.
Mr. Dinnin, Reel 8. Now, we were talking about your various battle schools you attended. The one other one, after the Barnard Castle School, you went to the 49th Division Battle School. Where was that at?
Yes, it was in place, a village just out of Knighton, that's in Wales. It had been a large country estate, and we were living in the big house at the time.
How many of you went on the course at once?
There were only two of us from our unit, and I was there with the intention of becoming an instructor in the 3-inch mortar.
Who decided that? Was that an interest of yours, or had they just pushed you on?
The commanding officer had decided that should be what I aimed at. And eventually, when the course finished,
What do you remember of the course?
Oh, it was very good, very compact, because I hadn't had any previous experience with the 3-inch mortar, so it was all new to me, but I very soon settled into it and quite enjoyed it. The fact was later that when I got back to my unit, I never got the opportunity to work with a 3-inch mortar.
What had you thought of it in training as a weapon?
Oh, as a weapon, it was very good. The shells were 10 pounds in weight, which was one of the drawbacks to it, because to carry around a lot of ammunition was quite a heavy job and quite a problem at times. However, the weapon itself was excellent, very accurate, and could be used under very limited circumstances. You could get a target as little as 50 yards away. In fact, we tried an exercise at one period when we fired a shell almost vertically and got quite a shock when it was so accurate and almost dropped down upon us. And that taught us a lesson about the accuracy of the weapon. Very good example, I think.
Did you do many exercises with it?
Oh yes, we did exercises with the members of the platoon, and or the class rather. One I remember distinctly was we were going through heavy undergrowth in a wood, and we had planned to set off charges at different points, and from a center point where an officer would set off explosions. And on this occasion, I was bringing up the rear of my little section and knew I gave the signal for an explosive to be made. And the student in front of me suddenly lifted his head up, very curious, obviously, and I leaned up to bang him down flat again. And I got the full blast of the explosive in my right ear, only about 2 feet away. This has caused me deafness ever since. An unfortunate incident, but one could expect that in this sort of situation.
Any other exercises you remember?
The other exercises were mostly to get the students involved in the difficulties of moving from place to place, because the mortar took to pieces. There was the stand on which it was fixed and had to be taken off if you wanted to move away. And these were all heavy pieces and required another member or two of your team to help move the mortar and the ammunition. The ammunition was the biggest problem of all because of the weight of them. You couldn't carry more than two cases with, that would be four bombs, that's 40 pounds in weight. And to carry that a long distance was a bit of a heavy task.
What about that? You were only doing the mortar training exercise. You didn't do any infantry exercise?
No, not there. I was purely and simply on the instruction side for the 3-inch mortar.
Now, you said that when you got back to your unit, nothing much came of it.
No. Shortly after I got back to the unit, the CO wished me to become the transport officer for the battalion.
What had caused him to change his mind? Have you any idea?
Yes. I felt that before taking over the position, we had taken part in a very large exercise involving the Canadian Army. And at the time, I didn't realize what the exercise was about. And apparently, it was a rehearsal for the Canadian Army to attack Sicily. And during the exercise, we were, as a battalion, we were the enemy, and the Canadians were the attacking force. And this turned out to be quite a large exercise. In fact, it took us 2 days to assemble all the troops involved, and at the end of the exercise, 2 days to disperse. At the beginning of the exercise, and just before that, we assembled in some fields.
Whereabouts? Near Carmarthen?
This was round the Newbury area. And the colonel called me to his office and said, at 11 o'clock on a Saturday morning, I want you to arrange some entertainment for the troops, because we'll be here for 2 days before the exercise starts. And I was astonished. And he told me to take his car and driver and the regimental sergeant major and come up with some form of entertainment for the troops. As we were in a town that I'd never been in before in my life, I thought the best thing to do was to approach the police to give me some idea of what was available in the town. So we went down, had an interview with the police, and they informed me there was a large factory in the town, and he felt sure they would be able to help in some way. So I went to the factory, visited the manager, and discussed the situation. Unfortunately, his football team were already involved somewhere else, but he arranged a match for the Sunday. So off we went back to the unit, and I was able to get some talent from our own unit for the Saturday, followed by the football match on the Sunday.
You mean variety talent, a show?
Yes. Picking on their troops, some of them quite good.
What sort of acts?
Some giving comedy turns, some singing a song, one playing an accordion, which I knew that he was very good. That sort of entertainment went over very well indeed. At the end of the exercise...
Do you remember much about the exercise when you were the defence against the Canadians?
Yes. I was then an ordinary infantry officer and with my platoon. And unfortunately, the CO had sent me out on a scouting patrol. In actual fact, I was taken prisoner by the Canadians, who put me in the back of a 3-ton lorry, and along with another man. And the Canadian officer foolishly left us alone for a few minutes, and I and my companion managed to escape. I reported back to the unit and went straight to see the commanding officer and told him what I had seen. And I had seen at least 500 tanks lined along the road. And the Canadians' unit, a battalion strong, I thought, was in the area. The result of this information was that the colonel decided then to retreat and march from that area for 20 miles, which we did from 7 o'clock at night until 7 in the morning. It was quite a sudden and rather tiring march, but we managed to do it. Then at the end of the exercise, he called me again and asked me to fix up some entertainment for the troops, because we would be there for at least 2 days. This I managed to do, and I'm quite certain the result of that was that the commanding officer realized that I was pretty good at organizing things, and I feel sure that's why eventually he persuaded me to take over the job of transport officer.
You say persuaded. Weren't you keen initially?
I wasn't very keen on it, because I knew little or nothing about motor cars. And I told him, if you lifted up the bonnet of a car, my mind would be a complete blank. However, he persisted, and I persisted, but eventually the second in command persuaded me to take over the job. And this I did eventually, and the commanding officer was very pleased to accept the situation.
So what was the job of transport officer in your battalion? How many troops did you have under your command, and what sort of vehicles? And then what was the role of the whole transport section? You could take them first.
Well, I was thrust in at the deep end, because we were in 3 weeks to have a general's inspection. So my first job, was part of the duties of a transport officer, was to attend to the administration, which had slipped rather.
What sort of thing did that involve?
Well, each driver has a logbook, which should be kept up to date. And the stores were important, repairs were important, the carrying out of routine checks on all vehicles to see that they are all roadworthy. Now, this to me became quite a problem, as it was all new. So I asked the colonel if I could possibly go on a course just to get familiar with the vehicles and repairs necessary. This I did, and went to Tenby in South Wales, there to a large garage, and I was sitting alongside a vehicle mechanic, watching him carry out repairs. And I moved from one person to another to see all the various jobs that were required during a vehicle having repairs done to it. This was very helpful.
You didn't actually learn to do it yourself, though?
Yes. I actually learned and had to do little tasks just to get very familiar with the different parts of the engines and changing wheels and that sort of thing. I went back to the MTO's office and began then to sort out the problems for the forthcoming general's inspection.
How did you go about that?
Well, I started to clean up in the office first, get things moving, and then got down to the repairs and got the vehicles back onto the road as quickly as possible. Unfortunately, the situation had diminished to such an extent that almost two-thirds of the vehicles were off the road.
What had been wrong with the previous transport officer? I mean, surely...
Actually, the previous officer, I thought, technically, was very good. But somehow, he didn't attend to the administration of that department. And for one reason or another, the situation had deteriorated and worried the colonel.
How many, what sort of vehicles did you have?
We had 26 three-ton vehicles.
What make?
Bedfords mainly. I think we had two Fords amongst that. And then we had motorcycles, 1,500 weight trucks. We had...
What were they?
They were Bedfords and two pickup trucks, and the CO's car was a Humber. And these were all had to be attended to and kept in good order.
And what staff did you have?
I had a technical sergeant. I had an MT sergeant.
What was the difference?
Well, the technical sergeant had to do with keeping the stores and replacements up to date. The MT sergeant carried out the duties of looking after all the drivers on the headquarters staff. The drivers were allotted to companies.
How many did you have?
The companies had one 1,500 weight vehicle for themselves, for their own use, and it was looked after by the company sergeant. Otherwise, all other vehicles came under my jurisdiction.
But how many drivers did you have?
36 drivers came under my jurisdiction. And all vehicles were my responsibility.
And what about fitters, mechanics? Or were they driver mechanics?
No, we had two experienced motor fitters, who were responsible for our headquarter vehicles and needing any vehicle needing extensive repairs came under their responsibility.
And so you launched a sort of efficiency drive to shake up the whole administration of this?
Yes. I had to go into every detail to ensure that we would pass with full marks on the general inspection. This, as it happened, went off very well indeed. And we were complimented on the good show of the MT section.
Now, what was the role of the MT section? I mean, what were the vehicles all used for? I know it sounds silly, but could you just explain?
Well, the 26 three-tonners we had were to keep the battalion going with rations, collecting rations, collecting petrol for the vehicles, collecting stores of all sorts, because we were... And normally, we would be called upon to move troops to various places who were taking part in exercises, and our main role was to stand by and carry out the instructions of the commanding officer.
The battalion wasn't actually mechanised, was it? I mean, you couldn't move the whole battalion in your trucks, could you?
No.
It was just for stores and things.
Just for
what about the 1,500 weights? What were they for?
Well, they were for carrying the men's kit bags and any stores required for the company.
And what about the pickups, the PUs?
The pickups were mainly used for officers, company officers, just for ordinary day-to-day duties.
And the CO's Humber's self-explanatory. The motorbikes would be for the...
They were mostly signallers who were attached to headquarters.
Dispatch riders.
Dispatch riders, in other words, yes.
Once you'd re-established a proper sort of maintenance program, were the vehicles mechanically reliable in your view, or were they good vehicles?
Oh yes, the Bedford 3-ton truck was very good indeed, and in comparison with the Fords, most of the drivers preferred the Bedfords.
Why was that?
Well, they were very reliable and seldom went wrong. It would be unusual if one of them broke down as a mechanical failure.
And that applied to the 1,500 weights as well?
Yes, they were very good vehicles indeed.
So the only reason that they'd been off the road was because they hadn't been properly maintained?
Yes.
There'd been a breakdown in the maintenance.
It was negligence, I think, on the part of the transport officer for not attending to the administrative side of the department.
Were your technical sergeant and your MT sergeant, were they good when you first got there, or had they slacked as well a bit?
No, they were both good in their jobs. Excellent they were.
So it was a lack of officer supervision?
Yes,
that had...
I think that's probably the answer to that.
Now, so you took this job on while you were still at Carmarthen?
Yes.
And is there anything else about that period you recall?
One day we were told to assemble and be ready to move as we were en route to Hamilton near Glasgow. This meant a long journey which took approximately 5 days to complete, with an echelon of some 25 miles with all the vehicles strung out at 50-yard intervals. And
that was the proper spacing, was it?
Yes, yes. And we continued up and stopping overnight at various places, and then arriving in Hamilton, apparently it transpired that this was to deceive the Germans, because we only stayed there for approximately 10 days and returned back to Carmarthen.
Whenabouts was that, roughly?
Yet this happened about in March of 1943, and we repeated this journey again after some 6 weeks, and this was all part of the high up program of carrying out movement, making as much movement as possible to deceive the Germans, who might have been wanting to pinpoint different units. So it was obvious that someone in the War Office had decided to try and bamboozle the Germans by all this movement, making us appear to be stronger than we really were.
So you went back to Carmarthen, that was still your main base?
That was the main base.
Was anything else happening, anything else you recall from that time?
at the time, the unit was busy getting used to normal movement, and especially from my point of view in transport, it was to train all the drivers in waterproofing their vehicles. Obviously, at some future date, we were going to make an invasion somewhere on the continent.
Now, how did you go about waterproofing a vehicle, say a 3-ton truck or 1500?
Well, we sent two drivers on to a course on waterproofing, who returned and they carried out instructions to the other drivers time and time again until we got it really perfect.
And how did they do it?
This was done with a special compound, rather like putty, but with other things mixed in with it to make the vehicle waterproofed. This meant attending to the sparking plugs, all the electrical components of a vehicle, and fitting pieces of tubing to allow air to get into certain parts of the vehicle. This went over very well indeed, and eventually we were sent to Norfolk, where we went to a small place on the coast called Galston, where they had a bath arrangement where each vehicle had to drive through this tank as an exercise to ensure that all vehicles were correctly waterproofed. We were very fortunate in that we had 99.9% success and came out top of all the units in the division.
Had the division moved to Norfolk, or were you still based in Carmarthen?
We had moved to a place on the coast in Suffolk called Halesworth.
When had you gone there?
We had gone there approximately late summer of 1943.
So Augustish.
And it was obvious we were moving over towards a setting off point for any invasion. And this actually happened. We were kept into that area until very much nearer D-Day.
Round Halesworth. Where were you actually billeted?
The troops then were billeted in the school. And the officers were in a small hotel, and we carried out just normal routine duties at that particular time. Training always centred on the fact of a big forthcoming invasion.
Had you had any actual practice of getting on and off landing crafts at that stage?
No. No, we didn't have any training whatsoever on landing craft. It was purely and simply training on how to get the vehicles waterproofed and watertight so that we wouldn't lose any vehicles on a crossing.